Now, thank you, Dove. And I see some of the same people here that were here last night. So let me just tell you, if you ever have a bit of a deja vu experience, this is why. Last night, I forgot to click on start to start the recording. And Dove wasn't here at the beginning. And he came in about halfway through the teaching. He did record the last half, but the first half wasn't recorded. And so he offered for me to come half an hour today, half an hour early, and just re-record the first half. And at first I thought, no, I don't really want to, I don't really care, you know. And then something in me said, yeah. So I thought, ooh, maybe I should listen to the yeah, especially since, you know, that wasn't my opinion. The first was my opinion. So I came back. I did listen to the second half hour, so I know what was missed. Basically, oops, sorry, I dropped the stapler. Basically, what was missed was 295, and then the introduction to 296. For the most part, 296 is there. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to reteach 295 in whatever way it comes today. It might be the same, it might be different. And then I will introduce 296, and then I'll stop. I'm not going to reteach 296. I listened to it, and the teaching last night was really perfect, and it's just no sense in redoing it. And then what I'll do later is splice the two recordings together and post them as one recording. After I introduce 296, I'm going to play a song. And while I play the song, I will save the recording, close it, and start a new one for today. And then we will go down and begin at 298. I don't think it will take me a whole half hour to teach the half hour I missed last night for some reason. I feel like it's going to be shorter, but maybe I'm wrong. So just whenever I finish and after we play the song, then I'll go ahead and begin with new quotes. So let me give you all a link to number 295, which is what we are going to start with in this retake. There's the link to 295. If you are in the room now, on the radio now, and you want to get to 295, you want to go to RDA7, which is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get there, just click on step 2, which is up on the menu bar. And then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 295. And then why don't we just start with a couple of minutes of chanting. Not a lot of chanting, just a couple of minutes. And then after this chanting, we will go into silence, and then we'll come back. I'm going to go ahead and replay the chant I did last night. We're just going to do a little less of it. This is the Arunachala Shiva. That's all it is. Arunachala Shiva. So let me get the volume turned back up. All right, here we go. Is not the right one. One moment. Here we go. This is Arunachala Shiva. Oh, wait. It's not starting. Maybe we're not supposed to listen to Arunachala Shiva. We'll take this one. Oh, yeah, it is. Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala, Arunachala. Amen. All right, so as I mentioned, we're going to start again with number 295, which, again, we went over last night. So if you were here last night, this will be a repeat. But I am going to be reading from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. We are looking at quotes by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And my guess is, if you were here last night, you will remember this one. This is the quote. The real does not die. The unreal never lived. Again, the real does not die. The unreal never lived. And of course, that is very, very, very much like the introduction to A Course in Miracles, which says, what is real cannot be threatened. What is unreal does not exist. The real does not die. What is real cannot be threatened. The unreal never lived. What is not real does not exist. You see how they are the same. Oh, sorry, I didn't have the book open, so I misquoted slightly. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. That's the Course. So the real does not die, Sri Nisargadatta. Nothing real can be threatened, right? The real does not die. Nothing real can be threatened. The unreal never lived, Sri Nisargadatta. Nothing unreal exists, A Course in Miracles. The unreal never lived. Nothing unreal exists. So the thoughts are exactly the same. I was joking last night that if Sri Nisargadatta wanted to, he probably could have tried to sue Helen Schuckman for copying his thoughts, putting them in the introduction. And who knows, maybe he would have had a case, you know, as far as the law is concerned. Maybe they would have said, well, those are similar. But, of course, there was no copying going on. It's just that the truth is the truth. I happened to be reading an article this morning, which is a very good article, but the man begins the article with a historical analysis of how wisdom spreads. And basically, you know, he said that at first wisdom was primarily limited to India. And then at certain points, this teacher went here and this teacher went here, and wisdom began to spread to the West. And although historically it may look that way, I just don't agree that that's the way wisdom spreads. Wisdom is in all of us. And any sincere seeker, anyone who really wants to know wisdom, and by sincere seeker, I have to define a sincere seeker as someone who wants truth more than the world, over the world, is willing to let go of the world, willing to let go of self in order to know truth. That is what I would call a sincere seeker. And any sincere seeker, regardless of whether they have had a teacher or not, regardless of whether they have had a teaching or not, comes to the same realizations. So I don't agree that teaching actually occurs from one person to another, and that it spread from India to the United States with a particular teacher. I don't think Helen Schuckman had to have any knowledge of India's teachings in order to write A Course in Miracles. It's just that her and Sri Nisargadatta listened to the same wisdom. There's only one wisdom. So the real does not die, the unreal never lived. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. All right, let me post the link to the room, link in the room again from my journal, just in case someone new has come in since I posted it last. And let's go read number 295 in the journal. Focus on isness puts attention with reality. Attention on reality misses, lacks nothing. It knows no sacrifice. It knows no loss. It knows reality, which is full. So, in the spring of 2008, I received guidance to say a mantra. The mantra was, I am that I am. And the guidance that I received asked me to say that mantra every time the thought came into the mind to say the mantra. And so I did that. And I said the mantra multiple times a day, not out loud, but just within myself. So I could be doing anything, and the thought would come to say the mantra, and I would just pause and just say in a devotional way to myself, I am that I am. And after a couple of months of repeating this mantra, whenever the reminder came into the mind to say it, I spontaneously realized what A Course in Miracles meant when it said nothing real can be threatened. I realized that what I am is that something real. You know, not what Regina is, not that Regina in some way survives, or that this body or personality or mind in some way survives as the nothing real that can be threatened, but that what I am, a word I use a lot now is before. What I am is before personality, before mind, before body. But that's the truth of what I am. I am before. And as that, I cannot be threatened. And it seems like that realization came out of saying the mantra, because somehow, and this also happened spontaneously or miraculously, because I had no intellectual knowledge of what saying the mantra was supposed to accomplish. You know, I was just following orders, just doing what my inner guidance told me to do, with heart, with willingness, but I did not know what the outcome was supposed to be. And somehow, just in saying the mantra, I am that I am, it's like at the end of it, when I would say it with devotion, you know, I am that I am, there was this split instant, not even a full second, this split instant that occurred at the end of every repetition of the mantra, of somehow kind of like touching or realizing or noticing this before. This self before self, I'll call it, which is being called isness here. And And it wasn't even a conscious noticing. You know, like if you had been around me at the time when I was saying the mantra before the realization fully came, and you had asked me, you know, what are you getting out of the mantra? I wouldn't have said to you, well, right after I say it, you know, for like the split second, I'm touching self. Because it wasn't even conscious. But it was there. Just this split moment. And somehow in saying the mantra with devotion and allowing those split moments to occur, even though they weren't conscious, over and over again for at least a couple of months, at some point the realization hit, I'm that. And the evidence that this realization was a true realization, and not just a thought, is because that was the beginning of the end of all upset for me. You know, up until that point, there had been a lot of different upsets, and I'd worked with Holy Spirit since I'd been on the spiritual path, kind of one upset at a time, you know, learning to let go of the thought that caused that upset, like learning to let go of betrayal, and then learning to let go of rejection, and then learning to let go of unworthiness, and kind of one thing at a time, right? Letting go of the things that caused upset. But after this point, there was a shift. There was a shift in that before, you know, I was still, you know, before I was still fully a person upset by a thought. I guess that's the way to put it. I was a person upset by a thought. I was Regina upset by the idea that I was rejectable. I was Regina upset by the idea that I could be betrayed, you know. But after this realization occurred, what really happened was a knowing that I'm not Regina. That I'm not affected by any thought or anything that happens in her life. I'm not affected by any seeming attachment. And somehow in that realization, this isn't anything that I can explain in a linear way, but somehow in that realization, all of the upsets began to fall away. There have been some minor upsets that occurred shortly after that for a brief period of time over the next, I'll say, six-ish months, next 6 months or so. And even they were few and far between. And then what seemed to happen was the upsets just kind of stopped. And at some point, the fun came in noticing how these, you know, apparently big things could go wrong, and there was no upset. There was not even a need for a practice of forgiveness. Because a practice of forgiveness, at least the way it was defined in my mind, a practice of forgiveness is noticing the upset that's present or noticing the thought that's present and then choosing again, choosing to let it go, choosing again, which means it was there. And what began to happen was it was never even there, so there was nothing to forgive. And this came out of a shift. It's not really an identity. I don't know that you can identify with the self or the isness in the way you identify with a person, because there's no object to identify with. But it's a realization. A subtle realization that I am that. And again, it came from those little bitty moments of kind of touching it at the end of each mantra. So that takes us back to 295 in the journal. That's why this says, focus on isness puts attention with reality. You know, the more and more that you can take your mind, your attention, away from your world, your thoughts, your problems, your worries, your regrets, you know, and just take even nanoseconds to just focus on isness, being. You know, another thing that helped after I first touched this, after I first realized this, there continues to be a process of becoming, I'm going to say, deeper and deeper in that realization. more and more consistent in that realization. And one of the things that helped, one of the next phases after the I am that I am, one of the next things that came up was noticing. Well, the way I put it was noticing that I'm always here. But when I say I'm always here, I'm not referring to the body personality. I'm referring to that self that was realized, that isness that was touched. So if there was some kind of upset, I would notice, but I'm still here. And of course, you know, during times of having a lot of fun, I would notice, I'm still here. During times of being physically tired, I would notice, I'm still here. I began to just notice that as the personality and the mind seemed to experience change, there was this isness, this presence that definitely cannot be separated from me, so it's completely fair to call it I, right? That was always present, always consistent. So whatever practice is helpful for you to put your attention on that as much as possible, that's what seems to lead to the realization. So focus on isness puts attention with reality. Attention on reality misses or lacks nothing. It knows no sacrifice. It knows no loss. It knows reality, which is full. Again, you know, nothing real can be threatened, right? So you're getting in touch with that isness, that part, that I that's before the little self, that I that lacks nothing. It is not affected by whether you're hungry or not, by whether the body is hungry or not. And by hungry, I mean, you know, hungry, like let's say you hadn't had food in 2 or 3 days. It's not affected by whether you're hungry or not. It's not affected by whether your bills are paid or not. It's not affected by whether you have friends or not. It's not affected by whether your body is healthy or not. It's always the same. It's not affected by whether you have a job or not. It's not affected by whether people like you or not. So it can't be threatened. And yet it's always present, always here. Focus on isness puts attention with reality. Attention on reality misses or lacks nothing. It knows no sacrifice. It knows no loss. It knows reality, which is full. So discover that. All right. Let's scroll down. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe this will take a full half hour. Let's scroll down and click on number 296. And I will also post the link to number 296 in the room. Now, as I mentioned, I am not going to fully reteach number 296 because it is recorded from last night, and I'm going to be splicing the recordings together before I post them. So what I'm going to do is introduce it, set it up for what Dove recorded last night, and then we will move on to 298, because the teaching for 296 and 297 are on last night's recording. First, I'm going to read number 296 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This is on page 61, and this is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. You are neither the body nor in the body. There is no such thing as body. You have grievously misunderstood yourself. To understand rightly, investigate. And I mentioned last night that if this was the only quote we ever had from a master, if we took this quote fully, we wouldn't need any other quote. We wouldn't need any other teaching, because this teaching has everything in it. It tells us that everything we have ever thought about ourselves is completely wrong, completely wrong. And then it tells us how to find the answer. Investigate. And As is mentioned on the recording, so this part is being repeated, but, you know, when we investigate, the investigation has to happen with, you could say, an awakened or enlightened teacher. But that awakened or enlightened teacher does not need to be someone that you have to go out and seek and form, because we have an enlightened or awakened teacher within us. A Course in Miracles calls it the Holy Spirit. But the point is, the ego can't lead this investigation. So if you are serious and you want to investigate, one of two things will happen, and it will happen naturally. Either you will be led to an enlightened or awakened teacher in form that can help you with the investigation, or the inner enlightened or awakened teacher will rise up and guide the investigation. And in my case, that's what happened. The inner teacher is guiding the investigation. Okay, so here's the quote again, and then we'll, read from the journal. You are neither the body nor in the body. There is no such thing as body. You have grievously misunderstood yourself. To understand rightly, investigate. All right, so we're going to look at the journal now. Now, this is the beginning of an investigation that occurs and continues throughout step two for me. We will read it now, but it's taught on last night's recording. Here is what was written. What am I? I am identified with this body. I point with my finger at this body when I say, I. But does this identification mean the idea that I am this body is true? Do I know for a fact it is true, or could it be an assumption? Could there be existence beyond the body that is I? I am identified with this personality mind, which seems to know things and remember things from this lifetime experience. I identify with this personality, mind, memory as me. But does this identification mean the idea that I am this personality, mind, memory is true? Do I know for a fact it is true, or could it be an assumption? Could there be existence beyond this personality, mind, memory that is I? Some say mind or soul exists beyond personality, memory through a process called reincarnation. This mind, soul carries imprints or karma with it from one lifetime to another. Some say I am the individual mind, soul that reincarnates. Is it true that I am the individual mind soul that travels from one personality body, from one personality body experience to another? How would I know if that is what I am, or if I am something else? What fact can I look at in my present experience and say, I know I am that? If there is a fact present now that I know I am, is there a reason for identifying with anything further like the idea I am mind, soul that reincarnates? Isn't that adding on to something that is simply known? All right, so as I mentioned, the teaching of this is on last night's recording, which after I finish teaching in this next hour, I will splice this portion with that and post it on Facebook. So if anybody wants to go on and hear this, you can find it on Facebook later today. Right now, what I'm going to do is stop this recording. And now we continue with last night's teaching. There will be a bit of repetition and then new stuff. If an external teacher is helpful for you, I believe an external teacher will be provided. I don't think it's anything you have to worry about or figure out for yourself. But I think there's also an internal teacher. A Course in Miracles calls it the Holy Spirit. It isn't called the Holy Spirit in all traditions. Lately, I only refer to it as wisdom. Whatever it is, it appears to be significantly real. It absolutely knows how to guide us. And if we have gotten in touch with that inner teacher, it will guide the investigation. So whether an external teacher or an internal teacher is provided, assuming the external teacher is truly a good teacher, they aren't all good teachers. So one needs to use discernment. But either way, you'll find the help you need. But the ego cannot do this investigation. The ego won't do this investigation. So some kind of guidance is needed. So what happened for me when I hit step two is that often when I would contemplate the quotes, that inner guidance would lead me in the investigation. So what we're going to see a lot of as we move forward from this point, especially after the 350, after number 350, we're going to see this investigation that was occurring spontaneously within me as I was contemplating the quotes. So this isn't something that the I, the ego, the personality did. I did not sit there and think of these questions in that way on my own. These just came through the contemplation. They arose. All right? So this is a guided investigation. And so the very first thing the guided investigation pointed out was that, you know, whenever I say, I don't like that, or I do like that, or I want this, or I want that, what I refer to is this body. This finger points to this body. And then it asks simply, but does this identification, the fact that this finger points at this body when talking about I, does this identification mean that I am this body? Is that evidence? This is what happens. Is that evidence? Do I know for a fact it is true, or could it be an assumption? So part of what we have to look at is what is the difference between a fact and an assumption? You know, an assumption can be based on experience. Sometimes people think that because it's based on experience, it's a fact. Certainly, without having the clarity of the inner guidance during the investigation, you know, because what happens when the inner guidance guides the investigation and not only asks the question, it actually also provides the scene that answers the question. So it's not like the inner teacher somehow asks, are you sure that you're a body, or could that be an assumption? And then I'm sitting there going, duh, I don't know, I haven't thought about it. It doesn't happen that way. Somehow, you know, miraculously, when the inner guidance asks the question, it also provides the scene that answers the question. So the question and the answer are simultaneous. Thinking does not get involved. So when it asks the question, do I know for a fact it is true, or could it be an assumption, there's a clear seeing that through the experience of being in this body in this lifetime, and through the experience of people calling me Regina, and through the experience of, you know, of me being this, there's always been an assumption that that's what I am. There never has been an honest investigation saying, could I be something beyond that? Is this just somehow a little fraction of what I am, for lack of better words, and that I've only been focused on the fraction and I've not been focused on the whole? And somehow, again, it's not logical because it didn't happen with a thinking mind, but somehow when the inner guidance asks the question, do I know for a fact it is true, or could it be an assumption, there was a clear seeing it's always been an assumption. I mean, I have assumed that I am Regina. Right? That's who people told me who I was, and I just, you know, from you know, the time I was born, and I never questioned it. So it is an assumption, and if it is an assumption, that means that it's open now for further investigation. Openings are critical. If we're going to get to truth, we have to have honest openings. And as soon as you say that you don't know something, something that previously you did think you knew, right? Previously you thought that you were Jay, or you were Cheryl, you were Barb, or you were Clara, right? You thought that, Lori, Dove, Monica, you know, Cliff, right? Previously you thought you were that. But as soon as you see, wait a minute, that might just be an assumption. I'm not certain that that's what I am. I know that that's been my experience. But I'm not, you know, that's open to question. As soon as you do that, you've opened up to investigation. And that crack is really all that inner wisdom or Holy Spirit needs in order to take you into a fuller realization of what you are. But if you say, I'm certain this is what I am, you provide no crack, then the investigation can't happen. Now again, this investigation at number 296 goes beyond the body. Because, you know, there was a belief with this, with Regina, there was a belief at one time, not necessarily now, but still, at one time, there was a belief for a lot of my lifetime that this body would die, but somehow I, Regina, would continue. Right? Which means my attachment to the body might not actually be my strongest attachment. There can actually be an attachment to what we could call a formless Regina, or a spirit Regina, or a soul Regina. You know, many Christians have this idea, probably many other religions too, have this idea that when the body dies, I somehow still exist. And in fact, many of us have this attachment to, to our loved ones, and to be absolutely honest, even to ideas like Jesus. Somehow we think that somehow this person of Jesus still exist as an enlightened mind in formlessness. So we have this strong attachment beyond the body that goes to the personality mind. So the next place that this questioning went was, I am identified with this personality mind, which seems to know things and remember things from this lifetime experience. I identify with this personality mind memory as me. But does this identification mean that the idea that I am this personality mind memory is true? Do I know for a fact it is true? Or could it be an assumption? Could there be existence beyond this personality mind memory that is I? And again, this was not a question put out to the mind that was somehow logically contemplated and answered. Somehow within the question itself, the clarity of seeing provided the answer. And the best way to describe the answer is that it was seen that the personality, and this goes for any personality, including the beloved personality of Jesus, right? The personality has a beginning. So the real question here is, am I something that has a beginning? You know, is Jesus, for example, limited to, you know, even in the Course he refers to his experience with his apostles, you know, he refers to the crucifixion, right, these memories. Is the reality of what Jesus is limited to those memories, that personality? Or is the reality of what Jesus is, and also the reality of what we all are, something that's even before that personality, before that mind, before those memories? And in fact, Jesus addressed this himself in his lifetime when he said the famous statement, "Before Abraham was, I am." So he stood there seemingly as the personality mind memory of Jesus, saying even before this other famous personality mind that the Jews would have known and revered Abraham, before that personality mind, I am. And the truth is, we can all say that. I, seemingly Regina Dawn Akers, can say, you know, before Ramana Maharshi was, I am. Before Jesus of Nazareth was, I am. Before Buddha was, I am. So the clarity came, right? The seeing came. That this isness, this nothing real that can be threatened, this true I am, cannot be limited to a personality mind memory that has a beginning. It has to be more than that. So the idea that I am this personality mind memory, and therefore since this is what I am, that this is what's going to continue, that this is what's eternal, that my parents' personality mind memory, that when their body ends, somehow that personality mind memory continues. The idea of a continuation, an eternal continuation of something that had a definite beginning, it's just not true. I mean, that scene just became clear. That's an assumption based on a limited experience, but it is not a truth. And again, realizing that that's not true, and many people don't want to accept this because we're attached to the personality, mind, memory. But realizing that this is not true, accepting that this is an assumption that is based, made on a limited lifetime experience, opens us up to ask, what is true? What am I? What is this Jesus? What is this parent, my mother or my father? What is my child? What is the truth here? And that's what we are supposed to be investigating, is the truth. The next question that's even beyond that, so we've looked at the body, and the clarity came that the body is actually, you know, it has both a beginning and an end. Everybody knows a body has a beginning and an end. So there's a phone in my face. Am I being filmed? I think I'm being filmed. I am. Hello, Danielle. Okay, let me get back to work here. Okay, nice seeing you. Hey, tell her now I know she's not listening.
Okay, now she is now.
Danielle's in New Hampshire this week. Okay, what was I saying? Okay, so the first idea, the idea that I'm this body, well, we all know that a body has a beginning and an ending. So, you know, we actually can more easily surrender the idea that I'm the body, because at some point we all know the body's going to end anyway, so we surrender that. But then the next thing we want to become attached to is, but I'm still this personality, and I, as this personality, will continue to exist somehow. But then if we look honestly at the fact that it had a beginning, you know, it had a beginning. You know, so is an assumption that I'm always this thing that had a beginning, or is it possible that I could be something that didn't even have a beginning? Well, that opens up a question. And then what a lot of people want to fall into next, like the next level of identification, is, okay, I'm not this personality, but I'm somehow a soul. I'm an individual soul that doesn't have a personality, but it goes in and out of different personalities over many lifetimes. But I'm still this soul. I'm still somehow me. I'm still this, something me, something meanness, this, you know. And so the question then comes, is it true that I am the individual mind, soul, beyond personality, beyond body, but still somehow a me that travels from one personality body to another? How would I know if that is what I am or if I'm something else? What fact? Now we're getting to the facts. What fact can I look at in my present experience right now and say, I know I'm that? Well, if I've already determined I'm not the body, You know, the clarity has already said, I'm not the body. That's just an assumption. I'm not the personality. That's just an assumption. But what is clarity allowing me to say, but yes, you are that? Where is clarity allowing me to look? You know, the guidance of clarity allowing me to look and say, yes, that you do know. You do know that. Well, the answer is, you know, for lack of better words right now, the answer is, well, I know that I exist. I know there's existence here. Not that Regina exists. Not that this body exists. We've just seen that those are questionable, and we will go into further questioning. But there's existence here. I mean, there has to be somehow existence before there can even be confusion, right, about what I am. There has to be existence before there can be a grievous misunderstanding about myself. How could you have a grievous misunderstanding if existence wasn't there first? Something has to be there to grievously misunderstand. Something has to be there to fall asleep and have a dream. So what I know is that I am. And that's not questionable. That's not even questionable. And clarity confirmed that. So if that fact is present now, if I know that I am now, right? Then why identify with an idea like I'm a mind soul that reincarnates? In other words, what clarity is pointing out here is the difference between a belief and a fact. That's taking on a new belief. And really what we want to be doing through this process of investigation is stripping away everything that's not true and getting down to only that which is true, so that only that which is true actually occupies fully our awareness and our knowing, and nothing else is in the way. Right? We're stripping away the obstacles to love's presence. The blocks to love's presence are being removed. Isn't that the job? Isn't that the task? And so when we add on a belief in reincarnation, a very popular spiritual belief, we are now adding on. Instead, clarity says, stay with only what you know. Say, the only thing I know about what I am is that it is. I know the isness of it is true. It has to be true. Maybe everything else is up to question, everything else is up to investigation, but the isness itself is simply known. Okay, tell you what, let's scroll down underneath number 296, and you will find another 297 that you can click on, and I will provide a link to that in the room. We have a few minutes left, so let's see if we can look at this one. Number 297 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says, okay, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says, my heart wants you awake. I see you suffer in your dream, and I know that you must wake up to end your woes. When you see your dream as dream, you wake up. But in your dream itself, I am not interested. Enough for me to know that you must wake up. And I have found this is true for me now. And in fact, I know that sometimes when people, even though I no longer officially counsel, I gave that up a year ago, sometimes people still contact me. And I've realized that sometimes I must sound to them, unless they're really ready, unless they really understand where I'm coming from, then they'll know that there's only love here. But if they aren't really ready and they don't really know where I'm coming from, I must sound like I don't care about them at all. Because I have no interest in their stories anymore. None. You know, they want to tell me their stories. They want me to empathize with their stories. They want me to maybe help them figure out how to make their story better. And I don't have that anymore in me, that interest in the story. And this is an honest disinterest. It's not some intellectual, oh yeah, don't get involved in your brother's story thing. It's a true seeing that happiness is never going to be achieved through involvement in the story. What you have to do is drop the story and look to find out who you are. And I know that that's the only answer, and therefore I don't want to waste their time or my time by going over the story. It's a distraction. And Srinath Argadatta is saying the same thing. My heart wants you awake. I can say that for every single person. My heart wants you awake. If I could give you one thing, it would be the realization of who you are, so that your story no longer mattered, not even to you. My heart wants you awake. I see you suffer in your dream, and I know that you must wake up to end your woes. When you see your dream as dream, you wake up. But in your dream itself, I am not interested enough for me to know that you must wake up. All right, let's look at the journal, number 297. Believing that temporary appearance is reality is the cause of all suffering. The answer to suffering is not seeing temporary appearance as real and attempting to resolve its problems. Again, to call me and tell me your story, this person that is the thorn in your side, you know, and to ask me to somehow help. You know, it's funny, at one time I would have helped you to see that person differently, but now I actually don't even have interest in that. Because somehow, in even helping you to see the person differently, there's still an involvement in the story that feels now to me like too much involvement. I don't want to help you to see that other person differently anymore. That was a stepping stone I went through too, but now I see it clearly as it was just a stepping stone. And if you stay on that stone too long, it actually becomes a roadblock. The answer to suffering is not seeing temporary appearance as real and attempting to resolve its problems. I don't want to help you work out your relationships anymore. The answer is realizing reality. The answer is realizing who you are. Therefore, the sensible response to any fear, desire, or upset is to refocus attention on that which is real. When you realize who you are, there are still what I would call challenging relationships around you. You know, a perfect example is Jesus. Now, a lot of people like to say, well, I like to believe, you know, that Judas didn't really betray Jesus, that, you know, this was something that Jesus and Judas decided together. It had to be done. Well, why don't we just let go of anything we like to believe, and why don't we just look at the story? The story says that Judas had doubts about Jesus, and because of his doubts, he went and turned him in and later regretted it to the point that he committed suicide. That's what the story says. So why don't we just go with that for a moment? Just the story as it is written. That would have meant that one of Jesus' closest friends could have been considered by others to be a challenging relationship, right? Wouldn't you say that's challenging if your closest friend doubts you and turns you in to those who want you dead? Well, heck, let's look at those who wanted him dead. Let's look at the Sanhedrin. Wouldn't that be called a challenging relationship? It's not a close relationship, granted. These weren't his best friends like Judas was, but these were powerful people in his midst that wanted him dead. Did the fact that Jesus was enlightened or clear, you know, listening to only one voice is the way he words it, did that make all of the relationships what the ego would define as a piece of cake? or were there still challenging relationships there? And did Jesus go around trying to work out his relationships? Did Jesus try and get Judas to understand? Did Jesus, when he was on trial, try to get the Sanhedrin to understand? He wasn't interested in working out anything in the dream. He had a single-minded focus, and that was full, complete awakeness. We could say that he was at the level of true perception, the level of enlightenment, and he was ready now to awaken from the dream entirely. He had no interest in working anything out in the dream. So believing that temporary appearance as reality is the cause of all suffering. And you can see how Jesus definitely would have suffered if he had believed that temporary appearance was reality, because he was in a pretty sucky position from that point of view. Right? Believing that temporary appearance is reality is the cause of all suffering. The answer to suffering is not seeing temporary appearance as real and then attempting to resolve its problems. And if this had been Jesus' point of view, I'm sure he would have defended himself or ran away while he was in the garden or something. He would have done something to try and better his situation. But that's not the answer. The answer is not seeing temporary appearance as real and attempting to resolve its problems. The answer is realizing reality. Therefore, the sensible response to any fear, desire, or upset. This is guidance for just average people like you and me, right? The sensible response to any fear, desire, or upset is to refocus attention on that which is real. Which the way the process worked in me was kind of noticing, I'm still here. I may be angry, but isness is still here. I'm still here. I may be scared, but I'm still here. I may be laughing right now, that I'm still here. And the more I focused on that I, not the personality, body, mind, but that I, the isness I, the more I noticed it never changed. The personality mind may be angry or laughing, but that I that allowed it, that enabled the personality, that I was always present and it never changed. And when you start to notice this, you're starting to really get somewhere. And I'm completely out of time. So with that, I will drop the mic. Bye, everyone.